The coronavirus has been spreading rapidly throughout China, and there now have been several cases in the United States. Many Americans are becoming increasingly concerned about this epidemic. Welcome to the Yeshiva World Podcast. My name is Yaakov M. Remember, you can subscribe to my 24-hour news and politics hotline by calling 848-261-NEWS, 848-261-6397. Could the coronavirus, chas v'shalom, become a widespread epidemic in the U.S. as it has in China? Can we be doing more to protect ourselves? What exactly is so dangerous about the illness? And is it more dangerous than the flu, which kills thousands of people every year, Rachmana Litzlan? We spoke with infectious disease expert Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glot about all these questions and much more. In addition to his medical expertise, Rabbi Glot will also share hashkafa that he personally heard in the past from gedolim like Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky and others. So let's get right to it. My interview with Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glot. We are joined on Yeshiva World News by Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glot. Rabbi Glot is the chair of the Department of Medicine and the chief of infectious diseases at Mount Sinai South Nassau Hospital. Rabbi Glot is board certified in infectious diseases and internal medicine. He's also a Rav in the Young Israel of Woodmere. I have no idea how he finds the time to do all of that, but I am in awe. Rabbi Glot, thank you for joining us to discuss the coronavirus.
It's my pleasure to be here and be Ezra Hashem to make people a little bit more comfortable and at the same time know what they're dealing with.
Oh, that is the goal. That sounds wonderful. Right now, it appears the risk in the United States is very low, Baruch Hashem. However, the coronavirus seems to be spreading extremely rapidly in China. There's been a big spike in the past few days, at least according to the media. What are the chances? I think people want to know what's happening in China to possibly happen in the United States.
Sure. So this is, first of all, people, I give a little bit of a background on coronaviruses.
Yes.
There's basically two types of coronaviruses. There's the, quote, standard ones that have been around for a long time that everybody's familiar with because they cause the common cold. And there are many different types of coronaviruses that have been well recognized for many years, and they, Baruch Hashem, do not cause serious illness in most people, and they're around for years. And in fact, people have been diagnosed with coronaviruses this year, previous years, and it has nothing to do with what's going on with China right now. It's a similar category of virus, but doesn't have the potential to be as serious as these new, what we call novel coronaviruses. And in 2002, we first saw the first new one of these coronaviruses that's much more serious, and that was the SARS coronavirus. And we unfortunately remember it affected the Jewish community in Toronto very much, as well as all over the world. And this was a much more serious type of a coronavirus that, Rahman al-Utslan, has a much higher mortality rate. Morbidity and mortality go up much sicker, and they can cause, you know, actual fatal complications. And Baruch Hashem, that was somewhat self-limited. There's still every now and then cases of it, but Baruch Hashem, that really was a one-time epidemic. In 2012, about 10 years later, we noticed another novel coronavirus called MERS, which is Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, which is, again, very similar to SARS, a much more serious type of coronavirus than the typical cold coronavirus. And we still have pockets of that in the world today. And that's a very big concern. And now, in 2019, in December, in the Wuhan area in China, it was identified a third novel coronavirus, and this one has a hard name to say, a 2019 nCoV, which means novel coronavirus. That doesn't have any other name at this point in time, and that's the machala that now we're dealing with that is a very serious concern in China. And the question is, how big a serious concern will be in the United States? And that really is unknown at this time. It is more serious in ways than the typical not serious coronavirus, but we don't know yet how serious. Will it be as serious as SARS and MERS? So certainly it has a higher mortality rate already. I mean, the Nebuch people are dying from it, much more so than the common cold coronaviruses. So in that respect, it is something to be concerned about. Baruch Hashem, it's been recognized, and we're instituting tremendous amounts of screenings to try to minimize the spread in the population. And be'ezus Hashem, we can somewhat contain it and control it outside of the endemic area in Wuhan in China already, and hopefully can limit its spread. In the United States, as of today, there are 8 reported documented cases of this novel coronavirus. And, you know, you have to put that in perspective. That's 8. That is something that potentially could spread. It has certainly significant potential for spread, but Baruch Hashem, it's only 8. I always tell people, influenza, which people don't take very seriously, kills tens of thousands of people every year in the United States. This year alone, from this 2019-2020 season, over 8,000 people, Rahmana Litzan, have died of influenza. About 60 children have died from influenza.
That's throughout the world, or that's in the U.S.?
That's the United States. That's just the United States.
Wow.
And there's been 20 million people roughly infected in the United States this season with influenza. And people somehow aren't worried about that. People don't take the virus seriously, and they don't take the vaccination, which is a bona fide proven way, albeit not perfect, but a very good way to protect ourselves. And we have a mitzvah, Nishmaat Modus Nashos Seichem. The person has to take the vaccine to prevent himself, herself, and as well your loved ones and people around you in the community from not getting sick.
Does the coronavirus, and it's a great point about the flu, the question is, does the coronavirus do more damage to people who are healthy? We know the flu tends to be more dangerous for somebody with either low immune system, elderly people, people with underlying issues. Is the coronavirus similar, or are there just completely healthy people who just could randomly die out of the coronavirus?
So the answer to both of those is yes, to both of them. Flu, all viruses,
okay,
all illnesses will over impact, have more potential damage to sicker people. I mean, that's just common sense, and there's almost no exceptions to that rule. If you're already starting off sick and you get whacked, so if you get, you know, an illness, any sort of an illness, infectious or not, your body's not going to be able to tolerate it as well as somebody who, Baruch Hashem, is otherwise healthy. So for almost all illnesses, if your underlying medical problems will make it more difficult to get through whatever illness it is, no matter how serious or mild it is. Certainly, there are some viruses that can only attack very sick people. But there are other viruses that can attack healthy people. Flu can kill healthy young children. Rahmana Litzlan, so too can it kill healthy adults. It tends to be much more severe, obviously, in people that already are sick. And the same thing is true with all these novel coronaviruses. They will clearly be much more serious in people that have underlying illness, but they can all impact and Rahmana Litzlan, make people very sick, even if they're healthy. So that's always the concern with these viruses. They can attack healthy people. And certainly people that are sicker already are much more at risk for complications from any virus, and certainly these more serious viruses.
Now, on Friday, there was a government press conference, and one health official said that the reason they're being so much more aggressive than they are with the flu, he said, because it's much less predictable. They know that the flu, once April and May hits, will tend to simmer down. That's what happens every year. It's sort of a cycle, whereas here, it could, for all they know, it could just get worse and worse and be totally out of control. Is that accurate?
So we don't know the natural history yet of this virus. It's just creating its natural history right now. So we don't know whether it'll be cyclical. We don't know whether it will stop. We don't know whether it'll come back in future years. It's really an unknown. I would never, ever say that we should ignore the flu. And this is a bigger mistake that people make than almost anything else. People just assume that they'll tolerate and get through the flu. And unfortunately, that's not the case. And many, many more Yiddish people are going to be impacted by the flu than will be by this coronavirus.
Uh-huh.
You know, almost certainly.
Now, okay.
I'm not a novice. You can't predict this, but based upon the scientific facts that are around, many, many, many more people will die and be very sick from flu than they will be from coronavirus in the United States at this point in time.
Okay, and not to sound alarmist here, but I think we do want to just kind of clarify. If we assume, let's say the worst case scenario, just for the sake of discussion, how capable is the government of containing this? And, you know, just looking at the facts here, in China, it seems like there was a very rapid spike. It's hard to believe the media reports from China, but on January 21st, they were talking 225 cases, and now 12 days later, they're saying 14,000. So even if that's not accurate, it's clearly spreading over there at a very alarming rate, and it can be spread by asymptomatic patients, which I think is one of the more concerning aspects of this. Somebody can be walking around totally, seeming totally healthy, and be spreading it. And now we have, of course, a person being tested in New York City. Is it possible, Chas v'shalom, if it kind of got to that level to contain it?
So we just had in the Gemara, Al tiftach peh l'satan. So I don't want to say anything that's too dangerous over here. But I think people do need to be aware. You know, part of our hishtadlus is to be aware and do everything possible. There is always the potential for serious spread of viral illnesses. And almost all viral illnesses will be somewhat contagious prior to the actual full-blown symptoms in a patient, because there's always going to be virus that's being shed. As the virus is being produced in the body sheds it in various secretions in various ways, depending upon the virus. So there always will be a short period of time before a viral illness where there's potential spread, even though the patient himself or herself doesn't yet have symptoms. So it's not like they're walking around for weeks without symptoms and shedding virus. That's not the case. That's why it's very important that people that have traveled to an endemic area, that's why many governments and institutions are now saying, if you're coming back from the Wuhan area, we want you to self-quarantine for a two-week period of time. This way, if you do get sick, you'll expose less people. For every one case right now, there are two more cases that are generated. If we can cut that and make that a lower number, then you'll decrease the potential spread of this illness. And that's why it's very important to self-quarantine, because you may be symptomatic a little bit, you may be contagious a little bit before you're symptomatic. And that's the whole hop over here to try to stop people from getting the spread, potentially spreading the disease before they're actually sick. Obviously, once you're sick, stay home. If you're Baruch Hashem, you're not sick enough, you need to be in the hospital, then just stay home. Don't have other people come into contact with you as best as possible. So that's how you'll stop the spread of this illness more than any other way. And by the screening of people at airports and people coming back from China, staying home and not going to work, not going out, I would say that this is a halachic imperative, that if a person, and when SARS came about, I had the schus to discuss this with the Shmuel Kamenetsky Shlita, a number of different situations with SARS, another rabban, we discussed it with Oshachta Shlita, Herschel Shechter, Mordechai Willig Shlita, and discussed this with other rabbanim in different times, Yidoli Yisrael, in terms of what a person has to do in these situations, and it's just potentially pikuach nefasha. So I remember an interesting psak that Shmuel Kamenetsky gave me. He said, if the people are in quarantine, then they don't sit shiva. Nebuch, there were some situations there where the family was sitting shiva. He said, don't go and sit shiva in that situation, because it's dangerous for all the people to come into the house when those
really?
People have been exposed.
So that's said, fascinating.
Situation, yeah. So this is the way to prevent the further spread of this illness, is by making sure that when somebody does get sick, that they don't go out to work. Everybody thinks, I have to go to work with the flu. I have to go to work with whatever symptoms I have. It's actually quite dangerous, and people should stay home. It's potentially that you're going to spread illness to some people that may not be able to tolerate it. And they could, Rachmana Litzlan, get very sick, and even Rachmana Litzlan die.
And that is a fascinating hashkafa perspective there from the Gedolim. That was one of the things that I actually wanted to ask you about. So on that note, what can we do? And hopefully we're not at this point yet, but what can an individual do, if anything, to protect themselves if it got to that point where people were concerned about, you know, catching it from somebody? I've read that even wearing a surgical mask is not really effective. It's effective for somebody who's got the sickness to not spread it to others, but not to protect oneself. Is there anything that can be done other than maybe quarantining somebody's oneself in a house?
So the most important thing is, if a person has symptoms, and it's not only of a coronavirus, if a person is sick with a potentially contagious illness, they shouldn't be amongst other people, because some of those other people may have cancer, Rachmana Litzlan, and be taking medications. Then
sure.
They can't get vaccinated. They can't protect themselves. And you're literally a person with a gun that's, you know, attacking them. You're essentially a road death after them. And you have an obligation not to hurt other people. So those people should stay home. They should be wearing a mask. The person who's sick should be wearing the surgical mask to somewhat decrease the bulk of virus that they're exposing other people around them in the immediate vicinity. We think it's only in about a 6-foot radius that there's a significant amount of virus. So if they have to be, let's say, there's a family unit, so we don't expect the whole family to run away. So the person who's sick should stay in their bedroom and not run around all over the house. And if other family members have to come in the room, so the person who's sick should be wearing a mask to decrease somewhat the spread of the virus in their immediate vicinity.
Okay, right. And this is a tricky scenario, but in other words, let's say just somebody is just concerned. They go to a workplace or they're in a crowded place and, you know, they want it to protect themselves. They don't know who's got it. Is there anything that they should be doing? I mean, other than the typical washing hands and being careful, or...
Right. I think the typical common sense things that your mother taught you were probably the best things. if outside of a hospital setting, where when we go into a patient's room, so we're appropriately wearing what we call PPE, personal protective equipment, so then we know we're dealing with a patient who's sick, and there are additional precautions that we can take. But in general, somebody's in an office setting and nobody there is known to have a specific illness, so then wearing masks in that situation, I don't think is indicated. And appropriate hand washing is always a good thing. And if somebody is sick, they should leave work and go home. The bosses should insist upon it. The bosses, you know, people sometimes think, oh, if I don't go in, my boss is going to be upset. No, the boss should be the one to tell you, go home, because otherwise his whole office is going to be out.
Right. I don't know if it's always like that, but absolutely true, especially, as you said, dealing with Secundus Nefusius. Can you describe a little bit about this specific illness, you know, what's so dangerous about it? They say that it can turn into pneumonia. And can you just give us a little bit more of an insight?
Right. So again, as with all viruses, there's different levels of severity that a person can have, even with, you know, very serious viruses. So you have some people that have milder symptoms, almost some have no symptoms, some have more serious symptoms, and some unfortunately have such serious symptoms they require hospitalization, and Rahmana Litzlan, some people can die from them. So with this coronavirus, there are many people that have very mild symptoms, and they may just have like what's a cold, similar to a cold. They'll have some fever, they may have some cough, they may have a little bit of, congestion and things like that. Other people progress and they really have more of a pneumonia. They have significant levels of difficulty breathing and can have all sorts of complications of that. If they have underlying heart disease, for example, that shortness of breath may lead them to have chest pain because it's as if they're having a stress test and they're failing it. So you can have all sorts of complications then from the shortness of breath and the diminished capacity for you to get oxygen into your body. And unfortunately, some people have such severe respiratory distress that they require a ventilator to breathe to them. And then some people, unfortunately, even with that, are incapable of oxygenating well enough and they never die. So it's a whole spectrum of illness. And the more severe, for whatever the reason a person has it, the more complications they may have. So that's going to determine how well they do.
And I guess we can
unfortunately, the coronavirus is fatal in a certain percentage of patients.
Yeah, it's a great description there. What would be, I guess, the best case scenario? You know, you mentioned that SARS, which was devastating, sort of ended on its own. And what could we hope for? I guess, is it possible that this just kind of simmers down in the next few weeks?
So, again, I think the best thing that we can do, I'm not a Navi and I'm not a Ben Navi. The best thing that we can do in this situation is try to go and to prevent spread as possible. And I think that the very, very good public health interventions that are being done in terms of screening at the airports, self-quarantine of patients coming back from an endemic area, and the recognition if you get sick, stay away from other people, are the best things that we can do to try to limit or ameliorate the spread of this disease. I don't know what will happen if we can minimize the number of people in the United States that are contagious. At some point, hopefully we can, you know, interrupt this epidemic. If new cases keep on coming in, so then there's no way to easily interrupt the epidemic. So I think vigilance on the part of public health officials and people in general is a very important way to interrupt the spread of this disease.
And is there a chance of that happening in China too? Obviously, it's much more widespread over there, but they are trying to just sort of lock down the cities. And do you think it could just possibly end there in a short period of time, or is that too much to hope for?
So theoretically, again, it's not possible to do this. If every single person was in a private area and not exposed to other people, the interruption of the virus would occur.
Right.
It's spread. It probably started from some animal model, and it's spread now from human to human. So if you interrupt the human to human transmission, the virus, you know, it lasts for about 2 weeks. And if the person gets over it, they're not contagious anymore. So they're not going to go and be able to spread the illness once they're well. The incubation period for this virus is probably on an average of about 5 days. That's the median, but it's probably between 2 and 14 days. So if you theoretically go through a cycle where nobody new is infected after 14 days, you've interrupted the spread of this virus. And as long as there are no new cases, you could interrupt the spread. And the hope is, at least in the United States, other parts of the world where there isn't a large number of people with the illness, that you can interrupt it. You catch it at the entry point. A person comes in off an airplane and they immediately go to their house and they're quarantined for 2 weeks. Even if they do get sick, they're not going to expose a lot of people, hopefully nobody. So that's the way to interrupt the spread of this virus.
Right. And what are your thoughts on the government response in the United States? There have been massive travel restrictions imposed. They're being very aggressive. They are still allowing Americans from China, and I believe even permanent residents of the United States. Is the government doing enough? Are they doing the right thing?
So I think the public health response has been superb. I think that the CDC, the departments of health, have all been very active, and I don't like to use the term aggressive. I like to say they're being very appropriate in terms of trying to prevent the spread. And sometimes that's a self-quarantine, which is if everybody understands the potential severity, then nobody should be upset that they've been asked to stay in their houses for 2 weeks. It's a very reasonable thing.
Sure.
It's an excellent way to prevent it. If that person, instead of going to their house, goes to work every day, rides the subway every day. Now, it's probably not going to be transmitted by a casual encounter, but if you're in a cubicle and there's four people next to you and cubicles around you and you're spending a whole day over there, so then you can infect all those people, and then those people will then go infect their families and potentially infect all the people that they come into contact with. That's how you multiply. That's what you have, what we call this reproductive number of two. Each case causes two other cases. If we can cut that down so each case doesn't cause other cases, you'll eventually control the spread and hopefully eliminate the spread of the virus.
Okay, and final question. Why do these, and it's part of my Amarasis over here, why do these diseases seem to originate in China or in other countries out of Asia? I mean, is it that they're, it may have originated animals, but yeah, can you explain that, please?
So I think that in this situation, as well as what we previously know from SARS and MERS, there may be these coronaviruses in bats and snakes and other animals, and they somehow have the potential to jump species, as we say, to go from being a pathogen in a bat or in a snake, and by human consumption of those things, you see the godless of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's prohibitions against shrotzim and things like that, that they're potentially safeguards for us. You know, we're not supposed to look at Tamei HaMitzvot, but it's always interesting, I find, when the reasons for some of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mishpatim against us, they make very good scientific sense. So in this situation, in China, in these open markets that they had in Wuhan, there was the consumption of potentially contaminated food that had this virus. And if this virus is a pathogen in a bat or in a snake, and then it can infect the human, and now it can be going from human to human rather than just from the human consuming the sherets, the animal. So then that's how you get these things sometimes starting in places where in the United States we wouldn't have these open air markets. Even if people did want to eat this stuff, it would probably be regulated against, and there would be difficulty to have such origin or initiation of such a species jump in the United States with our healthcare FDA food regulations and guidelines.
Very interesting. Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glot, thank you so much for sharing your tremendous expertise. In addition to your knowledge, there's something about your voice, which is very reassuring and very calming, I have to say, and your deep knowledge of the subject matter, obviously. So hopefully, you know, this will be very beneficial to people.
Yes, Hashem. I hope people take it seriously. I hope people take, you know, all the medical advice. The departments of health are our friends. They're not anti-Semites. They often have a bad reputation for various reasons.
Right.
Sometimes there are individuals that are not Ohev Yisrael. But in general, the public health advice that they give is very appropriate. And people need to understand that they're really not out to hurt anybody. They're really trying to help the public health. And at times we sometimes have kitata. We sometimes have disagreements with them on very specific little details, and we shouldn't lose sight of the overall huge benefit that public health officials have in controlling illness in our communities and all the communities of the world.
Rav, great point. Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glot on Yeshiva World News.